donate to a worthy cause, but you don't have the money? Here comes Good Deed and the opportunity to donate without using a credit card.
20 seconds of watching an ad. Is that the best and laziest form of charity ever discovered? Well, this week on Download the Show, we're looking at a service that does just that and the awkward, brilliant, and sometimes terrible intersection between technology and charity.
With only a few seconds to spare, you just made the world a better place.
Plus, would you watch someone else play a video game? Well, billions do, and now YouTube is trying to take a chunk of the game streaming market. And what is the best podcasting app in the world? For Apple, for Android, we are going to be examining all of the different options, all that and more coming up. This is your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. And we are here in studio with our panel this week. Luke Hopewell is the editor of Gizmodo Australia. Luke, welcome back.
Hello there.
And Claire Porter is a freelance technology journalist. Hire her. Hire her now. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Don't forget, you can tweet along with the show. The hashtag is download this show. We'd love to know your thoughts as you're listening to this on whichever podcasting app you happen to be encountering us on. Yes, we are going to be picking through the best podcast apps in the world for your particular mobile device. Stay tuned for that. But first up, one of the gaming industry's key growth areas is live streaming. There are millions of fans watching their favorite gamers play online hours at a time. It confuses the hell out of me, but I know that people absolutely love it. Now, Twitch is the most popular website for gaming live streams, but the question is, for how long? YouTube have announced its launch of a dedicated section of YouTube just to gaming, live streaming of games, and many suspect that it could topple Twitch's crown. So exactly what is it that Google have planned with this, Luke?
Basically what's happening is that right now, as we speak, the world's largest nerd convention is going on in Los Angeles. It's called E3, or the Electronic Entertainment Expo.
And Google, I see what they did there with the three.
Yeah, it's clever. It's
so
E-cubed. YouTube and Google have used that as a really, really interesting way of launching this new gaming channel to topple Twitch. Google failed to acquire Twitch a little while ago, so it's looking to launch its own competitor, naturally. Mm. Basically, what they're doing is they're having 12-hour live streams where they host all the press conferences, they host all the announcements, they let people see all the games before they're played, and then they talk about them, not just with, like, you know, neckbeards on the internet, but with, like, really proper, great people. Like, there's the editor of Kotaku, there's Felicia Day, who's an actress and known internet aficionado.
Yeah, she was on Buffy, but since then she's become like this massive kind of pop culture icon.
Yeah, and they're really
nerddom.
They're anchoring this coverage with really, really great names, and they're really launching as a competitor to Twitch. It's kind of curious, seeing as how Twitch is the official partner of E3, and they are streaming all this stuff as well, but YouTube is really trying to make a name for itself and launch big.
The interesting thing about Twitch is that Twitch has given birth to Twitch celebrities, people that play games but also put their personality into it. They have cameras on them, they say funny things. It's kind of like this separate old, like, fiefdom of celebrity. How is it that Google is going to, because in order for it to work, Google's going to really need to pull those people over, the stars, over to their service. How are they going to do that? What's the offer that they can make?
Well, PewDiePie is one of YouTube's most popular vlogger. He basically is an eccentric Swedish man who plays video games and live streams it for his audience. And I think he holds the record for the most amount of followers on YouTube. It would be very simple to export him over from YouTube into YouTube gaming, create his own gaming channel. Who knows? I mean, what's to say that they wouldn't give him the startup capital to launch his own game, or for any other indie developers for that matter?
YouTube also has something interesting going for it in the war against Twitch, and that's context. If you have a look at how people use YouTube, it's a post-event medium. People go to YouTube to have a look at stuff after it's happened and say, hey, I saw this great video on YouTube. Twitch is a very live medium. It's not very good at hosting stuff that was previously up there. It doesn't have a great playlist format, and it's not a really great player as well. Mm. YouTube has the context of saying that while this event happened live and you can watch it with us, which people might not know just yet and they're trying to get out there, it actually hosts it really well on the world's most popular video streaming site, so people can watch it again later. That's what YouTube really has going for it, in that while a lot of people might not watch it live, they can guarantee a lot of people are going to rewatch it, and that's something for personalities to keep in mind.
It's also worth mentioning that YouTube Gaming isn't just a platform for gaming announcements. Its intention is to create a live stream for gameplay action. There are already people that record their gameplay and put it on YouTube, yeah. And they're hugely popular. What they've fallen down at right now is the live aspect, which is where Twitch really has the upper hand. Once you're launching a YouTube-powered gaming platform that lets you live stream games, has the potential to create its own set of like indie games specifically for Google, as well as hosting a bunch of live stream events that have all of those announcements. I mean, that's a trifecta.
The interesting thing with Google is that Google have been building up this back end for live events. I think 8 million people watched the live stream of Felix Baumgartner jump from the Red Bull thing to the ground. That's a scientific way of framing
that. Interviewed that man.
And of course, they also live stream major music events like Coachella and stuff like that. So they have got this sort of back end. In terms of what YouTube gaming offers that's distinct from Twitch, there are a few handful of functions. For example, you can pause and rewind a live stream, and you can watch it on delay, so sort of similar to what you do with a PVR, like a TiVo at home. Do you think that's going to be enough of a sell for viewers, Luke?
Offering people functionality rather than the play and, you know, sit as just a meat sack watching a screen is really going to be something interesting for people looking to really get interactive content when they're watching their interactive content. It's like the human centipede of media.
You just call everyone meat sacks.
Yeah, like, kind of. The human centipede of media.
Has no friends, and now we know why.
The interesting thing is what the over the top functionality that they're going to have to offer is integration. Twitch is on everything. Twitch shipped on the Xbox One. It shipped on the PlayStation 4. It has integration with all the video card software that goes out with PCs. YouTube's just a URL at this point. So, for example, if you press a button to share, your only option at the moment on any of the next gen consoles is going to be Twitch. Google's got to really catch up to offer that functionality to users before they can actually be seen as a live or a catch-up streaming service.
If you were Twitch right now and you're seeing this gigantic behemoth of YouTube walking into this area, and they've got this amazing back-end to deliver live footage, and they've been doing it, you know, in increasing capacity over the last few years, if you were Twitch, what would you do to combat this?
I'd be looking to launch a series of games designed for live stream that is exclusive to Twitch, and that maybe can have some kind of sales connection through Amazon, that if you buy it through Amazon, you get a 20% discount for the first 3 months. You know, really leverage that platform.
Partnerships are really going to be key to how Twitch handles things in the future. Obviously, I mentioned they are the official streaming partner of E3. They're going to partner with a lot of different services in the future to put their technology onto new consoles and new platforms very, very quickly, so that they can actually say, hey, we're still here. Don't worry about those YouTube guys. Use us instead.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. It is your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. We are talking about Twitch versus YouTube Gaming, the new live streaming service that Google are launching. Are you somebody that's likely to stick with Twitch? If you're a Twitch user, would you necessarily want to move over? What are the sorts of things, the functions that would make you use YouTube Gaming? Let us know on the hashtag Download This Show, or of course on the Facebook page, facebook.com/ just go searching for RN Download. There's like a URL, I'm not going to remember it. Hey, next up, we are talking about podcasting, and to a large degree, the success of podcasting, of course, owes itself to Apple. That's where the pod part came from. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Apple have the best podcasting app. In fact, now there are tons of options for how you can listen to podcasts on Android, on the Apple iOS system. And today we're going to pick through the options so you can basically listen to this show in the best possible format. So I want to start with you guys. When you're picking a podcasting app, what are the functions? What are the things that you're most looking for that make a difference to you?
There is no such thing as a good podcast app. Oh. You can get the best of a bad bunch, and that's about it.
Okay, gauntlet thrown down.
Podcasts are hard. They don't seem hard because it's an RSS feed dumping audio straight into someone's phone. that seems pretty easy. But managing all of those streams is actually quite difficult. You have to build yourself a media library. You have to build yourself an RSS feed. You have to build yourself a player and then a web browser and then a sharer. There are a lot of ways for a podcast app to go very, very wrong. There are some very good apps across iOS and Android, but let's not kid ourselves and think that there's such thing as a good podcasting app.
What would it take to have a good one, though?
A good podcasting app comes down to something that can manage streams successfully, give you transparency over why something's not downloading, because for some reason it's relying on a lot of external partners, which means that a lot of streams might not download sometimes. And it's also about adequate episode management. So a lot of people chain podcasts together and listen to them when they're going around the house or going about their daily business, and they want to have a lot of podcasts in their library at once that they can click and press play. Without that, it means that you're missing files, you're missing episodes, you don't know why something's not downloading, and then everything breaks and crashes and it's a bad user experience. There are okay apps out there, but they are still very problematic.
I have this mental image of you doing like rage face listening to This American Life. Oh, going, why is this not working?
It happens.
Okay, Claire, so for you, when it comes to picking a podcasting app, what are the sorts of things that you're looking for?
Look, I downloaded Casts and never looked back. I haven't had a problem with podcasts since using that wonderful app. I mean, Apple's podcasting app is a disaster and it has all of the bugs that Luke just mentioned. In fact, I think, Luke, you were the one that recommended Casts to me. So
yeah,
the
full name is Pocket Casts and it's by Shifty Jelly. They're an Australian developer out of Victoria. They also make Pocket Weather, which is another good app that they started on. It's a fantastic app that's cross-platform for Android and iOS, and it allows you to create an account so that you can sync where you are across multiple devices.
It's a tiled interface that has a store that lets you search for their entire catalog of podcasts. It's really visual, which is nice. They've got like, you know, there's a little logo for every app. So if you're, say, on RN Download, there's a nice photo of Mark smiling.
Yep.
Or the spoiler guys. It's just a joy to use. I have everything synced to auto download, whether I'm across 4G or Wi-Fi. I have no problem with it. So I'm a bit upset to hear that you've been struggling with podcasting apps.
Here's the problem with Pocket Casts. Pocket Casts has a problematic library interface, which they refuse to fix for some reason.
What do you mean by that?
So episode management is something that I was talking about, obviously. Say, for example, you download 10 episodes of Serial and you jump onto a plane. You're out of data connection for a very long time. You've chained all these episodes together. Say, for example, your name is Luke and you're on a very long flight. You're listening to 2 episodes of Serial and then you fall asleep. Oh, goodness, I've fallen asleep. Let me go back and find what I missed. For some reason, Pocket Cast thinks it's a great idea to think ahead of me and delete the episode instead of actually letting me decide. There is an option in the menu that says, hey, auto cleanup. You can turn that off and it'll still do what it wants and delete that. That's one of many problems. Obviously, I'm not here to gripe about my problems with one particular podcasting app. There are problems
with
lots of
them. That is literally what the segment is. It's okay.
But be prepared to re-download episodes quite frequently on any podcast app, including Pocket Cast.
See, the flip side of that is I often found, particularly with the Apple podcasting app, that my phone would get clogged. In terms of finding podcasts, what's the best? Because obviously Apple have the iTunes store and it's still considered to be one of the better rankings of podcasts. But are there, in a discovery sense, what do you use to find new things?
I'll say that this is a weakness across all podcasting apps, like Luke was saying. The iTunes store is the only store, to my knowledge, that actually brings up the best new podcasts for that day. So if somebody's launched something in Saudi Arabia and it happens to have blown up, it'll be there for me as a recommendation. Across all of my podcasting experience, I have to know what I'm searching for. On Pocket Casts, their recommendation engine, I will say, is fairly weak. I've never wanted to go into Pocket Casts and just browse because I've found that the results just aren't particularly interesting. They're not based on my interests, nor are they based on the most downloads or anything. I've tried to go through the algorithm to figure out what's powering it, and it just seems to be a random collection. And it's a shame that I have to kind of really go back to Apple if I'm looking for something new that's based on readership or audience.
So you go to Apple to kind of find the titles and then you listen to them in Pocket Casts?
Usually I've heard about it, so I just search it directly in Pocket Casts and subscribe to it.
Right.
But if I just want to know what's out there, if I want to add to my library and I want to know what I'm missing out on, Apple for me is the only option, and I think that's a little unfortunate.
The best podcast curation apps rely on people. You can't you know, rely on a machine to have good taste in podcasts. Mm. So I think the best apps that you have to look for are the ones that actually do have that human curation element. It's random on Pocket Cast because there is someone actually sitting there looking for new podcasts and putting them in your feed. But getting away from Pocket Cast and moving on to a lot of different platforms, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio are two apps separately that have really good curation, that have podcast functionality. There's also another iOS app called Overcast, which is actually quite a nice interface for discovering and managing your podcast as well. But at the end of the day, it's about keeping in touch with what's new in podcasts. And sometimes that comes back to the mothership and who's actually invented the medium, which is Apple.
I do want to talk about TuneIn, because TuneIn is an interesting hybrid of an app, because it's not just podcasts. It's also taps into radio streams, live radio streams, and also time-delayed radio streams. So one of the things I tend to listen to is I listen to a lot of the BBC, a lot of BBC programs that should theoretically be geo-blocked to the UK, but somehow through TuneIn you can actually listen to them all around. Like, so there's whole radio shows with music, that the sort of thing that normally you wouldn't be able to access. And so TuneIn almost operates in this space where it's a little bit like a PVR or TiVo, where you can start treating radio, big chunks of radio that aren't being podcast in that sense as well. Is that an oversight for the likes of Pocket Casts and indeed iTunes itself, where you can't necessarily treat radio like you would say television?
I would say it's a deliberate oversight, because they really can't afford to be sued in so many different sectors of their business. Unfortunately, they have licensing and copyright agreements with a bunch of service providers like radio stations that would prevent them from getting into that area. I think it would take a massive education curve for Apple to come in and educate these businesses about why it's a good idea to stop geo-blocking everything. It doesn't even need to be a podcast.
I'm sure the BBC, just to take them as an example, would prefer not to geo-block, but it's about licensing rights. And I think I have no doubt that as an organisation, they would much prefer to have a global audience, particularly in light of Apple launching a global radio station very soon. But I think that's, I mean, just speaking from a broadcaster standpoint, I'd love that, you know, coming, Triple J, I'm sure, would love to broadcast their music content everywhere in the world where possible, but I know that they can't, and it's only because of licensing stuff.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about how it's a bit of a different beast and how that might be a missed opportunity, simply because I don't think one app needs to do everything.
Yeah, that's true.
You have a look at, you know, you have the average person has about 30 to 40 apps on their phone, for example, to do various things. And while we might like one to do everything, you know, one app might not do one thing particularly well. Have a look at TuneIn, and it's doing really well in cars, for example. It's designed to replace radio, like Sirius XM in the US, and like other satellite radio channels. What it does really well is give you that sort of internet protocol radio, and also backs it up with a podcasting sort of back end, so that you can listen to those later if you want to. Same with Stitcher. It's designed to be global talk radio in a satellite sort of sense, only hosted over the internet. I don't think one app needs to do everything. I think if you have lots of different apps that do things very well, you're going to get a much better experience.
Particularly in light of the fact that increasingly broadcasters are setting up their own app. So obviously there's the ABC radio app. Broadcasters all around the world, CBC, of course the BBC as well, have their own dedicated players for that as well. You brought up something very interesting there, which is integration with other listening environments, most notably cars. Most people, cars are a huge part of their radio listening. Who does integration with a car best in a really smart way?
So touching on that and expanding on it, I would actually say that Android and Apple are probably doing this the best, because what these companies do really, really well is give developers a platform and then step back. Mm. So with cars, you may have heard of something called Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Those two things, basically, you plug in your phone or you connect it wirelessly with the new iOS to your car, and it automatically takes over your car's head unit and gives you something familiar to use that looks like a cut-down, simplified version of your phone. What it actually does then is that it keeps your eyes on the road and gives you that lean back experience where you don't need to touch anything. So for example, you can say to your Siri or to your Google Now, open Pocket Casts or open Overcast or open Stitcher or TuneIn. It'll do that, and all you do is press play like you would on a normal car stereo. These companies, Apple and Google, are doing really great stuff by giving these tools to developers so people can actually be safe on the road when they're using their apps. Speaking of design, it's really interesting. Apple is renowned for its design, and yet its podcast app looks like, you know, a pile of steaming shit.
Yeah. But it really does.
It really does. It's a bad app. But
yeah, it's terrible.
The interesting thing about Pocket Cast, just touching on your thing, is that Google has a design language called Material Design, Apple has its own iOS design language, and Pocket Cast doesn't fit into either. Mm. It sort of sort of takes and borrows really good design elements from both in terms of the use of fluorescent color, the use of translucent bars, big artwork, things like that, and really creates a great looking app. Overcast, I'm a big fan of at the moment because it looks very similar to SoundCloud, and I really enjoy that sort of orange and white with big images display. I'm a big fan of color and blank space, so anything that does that really well is
Stitcher, Pocketcast, and SoundCloud all make really great use of color. I find we're obviously big supporters of SoundCloud on download. We have quite a large SoundCloud following. I find it to be the most incredibly glitchy service in the world.
And it's
a shame because I love that it moves across. You can deal with it on a desktop, on a tablet, on a mobile environment, but it's just incredibly glitchy.
There's no money in free music, man.
Yeah, apparently it's not.
SoundCloud is for me what like Groove Shark was in like the early 2000s.
Illegal.
And ugly as hell.
Only a little bit illegal. In terms of what design element or functionality you think all of these most need? Like, what's the hurdle that they haven't jumped yet that you would most like as a user? Is there something that stands out?
Recommendation engines.
Yep.
Based on what your personal play experience is, but also based on what's surging on that particular day, not the week, not the month. Like, I want to know what's happening now.
Would you say trending? Would you like things to trend?
I refuse to use that word on radio.
How about you, Luke?
I think fundamentally, I'm not a developer, so this may come across as quite silly to say out loud, but I do think that the idea of feeding an audio file through an RSS or a really simple syndication service to an app is actually quite a dumb idea. It's something that it's why it breaks all the time. It's something that relies on a lot of external people to bring in their files and assumes that everyone is as smart as an audio engineer as the person who built the app. I think a broader rethink of how we distribute podcasts would be really nice because then episode management issues would go away. But at the same time, I think sharing particular points in podcasts, maybe giving people their own audio editor to say, here's 30 seconds of a joke that I really like from Hamish and Andy or from Download This Show or from the BBC Radio News Quiz.
Well, there are services that do that. Obviously, there's Audio Boom. I think there's a local one as well. But my only issue with some of those services, what they actually do is they lift out the audio and they repost it, which means if you're a broadcaster, your continued survival is based on metrics of, X number of people listened, it actually takes that away from you. And I think that is one of those areas which I don't think they've necessarily solved yet. I know the one advantage I will say about particularly SoundCloud is that you can send people directly to a time code. And I think that has that advantage. But you're right, being able to pull out excerpts is an issue that hasn't necessarily been dealt with. If you're listening to this on whatever podcasting app you are listening to, we'd love to know what are the services you love, the things that you hate, the functions that you'd like to see completely redone. Let us know on Twitter. The hashtag is Download This Show, or if you happen to be listening on SoundCloud, you can leave a comment right in the stream.
And tweet me at Luke Hopewell with a podcast you're listening to because, God, I need some more.
Need more podcasts? Same. Well, the ABC has a new series of them. Science
does
versus...
it now.
Go to the website. I'm not going to do it for them. Okay, and finally here on the show, doing good deeds just got that much easier for the lazy people. When we talk about giving time to charities, normally we imagine building houses in Kenya or working in a soup kitchen, but what about watching an ad? That is the idea of Good Deeds, which are helping NGOs, so non-government organisations all around the world, by using revenues generated from 20-second sponsored adverts to fund their work. It works a little bit like this.
Go to the Good Deed website, www.gooddeed.com, and choose your donation, a tree, a meal, or a vaccine. Watch the ad for at least 20 seconds. Feel free to click on the ad to find out more about the product or service. After watching the ad, confirm your donation to one of our NGO partners, World Food Program, UNICEF, or WeForest. With only a few seconds to spare, you just made the world a better place. Vaccines, meals, and trees. So what will be your first free donation?
There you go, that's a taste of Good Deeds. Is it just me or is this like the laziest form of charity known to man?
It's halfway between doing something and clicktivism, I think.
Well, that's true, if
clicktivism is doing nothing and actual activism is doing something, Good Deed sits right in the middle where you can actually maybe have a slight tangible benefit.
That is true. It is kind of bridging those two worlds where, so often people click on things like, I'm in favour of this important social thing and then nothing ever happens.
I'm using a Twitter ribbon and a hashtag.
That's going to be the pull-out quote of this one, and we're going to have like a little meme of you saying it just Hooray. Like that with that face. That's not going to come back to bite you on the ass at all. Claire, is this the sort of thing that you think actually might work?
Not unless they can find a way to integrate with existing services that run ads. Like, I imagine something like this would be really useful if they could get YouTube to adapt it, because you're not actually there to watch an ad to give to charity. You're there to watch a video that has an ad at the beginning. that has the effect of sending money to charity, all the better for it.
That's an interesting point. So it's like, this is probably better served if it were a function that you could employ inside, like, in, you know, YouTube pre-roll ads.
Yeah, I just don't know if anyone's going to be convinced to go to a website to sit through ads just to send money to charity. As much as people say they want to do good, I don't think if it means sitting through a bunch of ads to do it, I just don't think they're going to.
This raises a generally interesting area, which is the intersection between charity and technology, where what works and what doesn't. Are there particular apps or services online that are operating in the charity space that you think are really innovative, that are changing the game, to use a MasterChefism?
The intersection of charity and technology is a really interesting way to put it, simply because there's a lot of computing power that's on your phone that can be used to do a lot of interesting maths that's not actually being used. So Sony and HTC have two separate apps which let you, when your phone's plugged in at night, actually use the computing power of your phone to solve algorithms for research organizations. Mm. So, for example, Stanford is looking into protein folding, that you can actually go and have a donate your computing power to their research engine.
That's great, because years ago, the search for extraterrestrial life would actually do the same thing. You'd be able, they'd download maps and use the computing power of your machine to
go
find aliens.
HTC have something similar, so where you can actually pick a project that you like and donate your computing power to that. Another one is called C-Click Fix, which is a way that you can have a look at stuff around your neighborhood and see if there's graffiti on a wall or something like that, or, you know, broken streetlights, or no one's obeying this particular traffic crossing. Highlight it on an app and it will actually go to your council to fix it and to change it. It's sort of community activism meeting technology.
I have this mental image of a person walking around with a wireless mouse and just going on a pothole and just... It's like a bad... it's like a bad, like, extremist sketch in my head that
like
no one's ever
like
going to make.
The digital experience of that guy that's drawing penises over potholes because it's the only way to get them filled in. If you could do that on, like, Google Maps or something, it would be amazing.
Would it?
Yes,
would
it would.
Would it really?
We put dicks on things. It's fun.
Luke?
The only other one that I've got is something called, quote-unquote, donating your photos, which feels obnoxiously marketing-y. But every time that you allow one of your photos to be reshared by, I think it's a particular brand, I won't mention them because that's all they want, they actually let you, they donate a dollar to charity. Why not just donate the money anyway?
Yeah, that's
well,
just
they
a
are donating the money anyway. They're just using your photos as a marketing exercise.
Just give it all once.
Are there things that stand out to you that you think would work?
Nick Ross's nanopayments, I think, is a totally under-researched, underutilized idea that if you could be donating a fraction of a dollar to all of the causes that you like, whether that's a news organization or a not-for-profit, and it just runs a banner that's unobtrusive off the top of the page and is giving less than a dollar of your time every time you want to donate something across a longer period, I think that's fantastic. Also, I can go without... If you're trying to cut down on alcohol or cigarettes or coffee, you take your allocated budget for that and donate it to a cause. It's kind of the idea of, you know, for a dollar a day, you two
it's
can feed a child. It's absolutely.
The appification of Lent.
I think that is as good a point as any to wrap up the show. If there are charity apps you think are really groundbreaking, really interesting, that you think are worth covering, let us know on the Facebook page. Just look for RN Download on Facebook. We'd love to hear from your ideas. That is all we have time for in this week's show. Very big thank you to Luke Hopewell, the editor of Gizmodo Australia. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks, awfully.
And freelance technology reporter extraordinaire, Claire Porter, thanks for coming back.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
And as always, my name continues to be Mark Fennell, and thanks for listening to another episode of Download This Show.